Hello and welcome to episode 35 of Shifting Perspectives. This week I'm joined by registered psychotherapist Natasha Pennycook. You may remember Natasha from episode 7 when we discussed the healing of the self, the family, and the community. With so much going on in our world today and now entering almost a year of having been feeling the effects of being in a pandemic, I wanted to chat with somebody about anxiety. Natasha breaks down what anxiety is, what it looks like, what it feels like, what to do when you experience it, and in general provides us with some great tips and tools to add to our toolbox. So I just want to start by welcoming you back, Natasha. For listeners that haven't been listening for a while, Natasha was one of our very first guests. It was actually episode 7. So that was a good while ago. She was here with us when we discussed the healing, the self, the family, and the community. But what I want to do first, because I'm not going to make the assumption that everybody heard that episode, is I want to give you an opportunity to tell us about you and what drives you.
Oh, what a great question. Hi, everybody. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me back.
Good to have you
amazing,
back.
Amazing. Amazing awesome to be stuff. Back. And congratulations with the viewership and the listenership that has been happening. This is amazing.
Thank you.
You'll be able to reach so many people. So yes, everyone, hello. I am Natasha Pennycook. I am a registered psychotherapist in the Toronto, Canada area. I really work from an anti-Black racism lens. And what that means is that I really talk a lot about how race, systemic issues are really part and parcel of who we are, especially as women, as Black women. And I provide individualized psychotherapy. I do speaking engagements. I do clinical consultation. And I really work to help men and women who have been struggling with the self-doubt and the fears and the worries that often get, that are often things that we don't really speak about, especially from a mental health perspective, especially from anxiety, from depression, from trauma, from generational stuff that have happened. So I really work to help all of us really to be able to thrive and live a better life.
Awesome. Okay. So as I mentioned, the first episode, we really talked about healing. We talked about healing of the self, the family, and the community, because that was probably around May or June of last year. And so we had just had the death of George Floyd and everything that came after that in terms of the protests and what we were starting to see with the pandemic and coronavirus. And systemic racism was really starting to come to the forefront. Now, this was months ago, but I fear that we're kind of still in that same cycle. Or where do you feel we are in terms of the healing and everything that's been going on as of the last few months? You know, what are your thoughts?
So, you know, I always say that healing is a continuous process. It's a continuous journey that we need to do.
We can't just check that box.
No, we can't. We want to.
I know. We want to put a timeline on you. See, even I'm trying to put a timeline on you. Go ahead.
Yes. Want to. And it's so funny because all of my clients, especially the clients that I work with one-on-one, they ask me, when will I get to that place? When do we start? I'm with clients in sessions. They're always asking, when do we start? When do I start the healing? And I'm like, we've already started. Just the fact that we're here, we're having these conversations, this is part and parcel of the healing process. But I really have to stress this, that it's not a one and done. It's not a checkbox. It's a continuous process. So when you speak about, you know, the murder of George Floyd and the systemic issues that have stemmed from that, but systemic issues that were always in place, it's just that now they've come more to the forefront for the world to see. We're doing continuous healing. One thing that I've said recently, that it's amazing that, amazing, quote unquote, right, that all of this is at the forefront for other individuals to be aware of. But at the same time, for myself, for those of us who are Black identified folks, it's heavy. It's another layer on top of everything, because it's right there. It's all in our face. It's re-traumatizing. Right. And it puts us sometimes back into that victim space that we work so hard to get out of, to elevate ourselves. Right. Mm-hmm. So when we speak really about healing, we need to know it's a continuous process. And the only way really it can be done is that we do our work and also have these conversations. We have people to hold us accountable. So we're always moving forward and doing this work.
You know, the fact that you mentioned having to have these conversations. And, you know, I think that's so important that we're intentional about saying that, because so often these conversations aren't had, or they're under the carpet, or they just happen by chance. But there's a lot of discomfort that comes with it. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of, we don't want to go there. But that talking is so important.
Yes, it is so important. There's also the guilt, right? And whatever side you're on, the guilt plays into the shame and plays into the blame and plays into the discomfort. So it is important to have these conversations, because we need to let people know that this is not, again, a one and done kind of thing. Something that I've actually noticed that a lot of, not only individuals, but really corporations and companies, they're trying to increase their diversity and inclusion initiatives, which I think is amazing and it's great. However, there needs to be accountability. It's not only, again, that checkbox. There has to be, okay, we're doing all this stuff to be more inclusive and to really focus on equity, but really, how are we going to change the policies?
Yeah, because a lot of policies are not in place. Then it is.
Right. Thank you.
It's a check the box, but it's not even a real check the box, because it's just on observation, right? There's no data behind it. You know, as you were speaking, I was thinking of, you know, and we haven't chatted about this before, so I'm not sure if you've read this book, Cast, by Isabel Wilkinson. But I just wanted to mention that when I read that book, and it's a brilliant book about the caste system in the United States, and it's called Caste, The Origins of Our Discontent. To me, it highlighted how important it is that we also increase our knowledge base, right? That we increase our knowledge base on what is happening, but also where it comes from when we have these conversations, because I can honestly say that I did not understand the Black American experience as much as I thought I did, right? The Black American experience and the Black Canadian experience being very different. You know, I'm not saying we don't have our problems in Black Canada as well, right?
Do.
But they're being very different, and being able to parallel the history there and what happened in Black America, what happened in Black Canada, right? And what I see living in the Caribbean region. So I just wanted to add that in, that in addition to our need to talk about the now and process the now, there's still some processing that when things come up, when we get a true understanding of the past, in order to be able to direct our way forward.
Forward, yes. So it's so interesting, because I have not read Cast. I've heard of it, but I have not read it. But there's so much truth there that, yes, a lot of times we equate, especially Black Canadians, sometimes may equate that, you know, there's a different history and there is a different struggle in terms of the Black American experience and a Black Canadian experience. And I think one of the really big things is in Canada, we are, I want to say allowed, right? But I'm going to use the word allowed loosely, to keep our cultural heritage as part of us. Like, we might say Black Canadian or Caribbean Canadian or African Canadian. But in the States, many times there's not an understanding of what the other culture is, right? And I think coming from Caribbean parentage, we still has that connection to the Caribbean region, to the foods, to the flavors, to the family. And we're able to trace our lineage pretty far back as compared to some of our American brother and sisters.
Yes,
but I mean, when you look at the Black American experience, I have gone to many conferences in the States where I've spoken with colleagues and they're able to trace their lineage back to North Carolina or South Carolina, but that is it. And not having a full understanding of where they originate from, or even knowing that their name is not really their family historical names, right? I mean, we have that too from Black Canadians and Caribbean Canadians as well, but there's just a disconnect
There is. Certainly.
And then being in an American standpoint where it's like, I am American, but still knowing there's a disconnect there, it just continuously plays on you. So mm-hmm. I do 100% agree with what you say. In order for us to be present in the now and in order to move forward, we do have to go back to the past. And this is why I always speak of the generational and the multi-generational traumas, especially from an anti-Black racism lens, because if we don't unpack that, and then especially from a mental health perspective, we are not doing justice for some of our peoples who are going to seek therapy, because this is part and parcel of who we are.
Totally. And by us not acknowledging the multi-generational, then especially when I think of it from the perspective of adolescents or young adults, when they run into something, they feel as though nobody before them has had this, that nobody before them has had these struggles, right? Because you came from a strong place and you can do this and you can do that. Yeah. When so often there's a history there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that, that leads us right into why I wanted to speak to you so much as one of the first episodes to kick off this year, is because I really want to talk about anxiety. Anxiety has been, it's been showing up in my conversations. It's been showing up in my circles. It's been showing up with my clients. It's been showing up with, you know, parents speaking to me about what their kids are going through. And so I want to talk about that today to understand exactly what anxiety is, what it looks like, and especially amongst Black women.
Yeah. So it's interesting, right? Because anxiety, the term and the name anxiety, it's gotten a bad rap, right? A lot of people are like, this is it's a bad thing. It's a taboo thing. We don't talk about this. But if you think about from, I guess, from a biological perspective, anxiety is actually a useful thing. All right. It's a useful thing because from a biological perspective, it's a useful thing because it tells us to be aware of and to protect ourselves. So, for example, you're going to cross the street and God forbid, you know, a car is coming at you. Your anxiety kicks in, that worry kicks in, that fear kicks in, that I will get hurt. Again, from a biological standpoint, as human beings, again, very biological, we need it to survive, to thrive, to be able to go on to our next thing that we need to do. So we need anxiety. To be able
to just knock it out completely.
We can't just knock it out completely. No, because then the car is going to be coming, right? The car will be coming. You're like, look at that. It's getting closer. Oh, okay. It hit me, right? So we need some sort of anxiety in our lives. But what happens with anxiety from a disordered standpoint is that it becomes too much. It becomes heightened. Mm-hmm. It's like those neurons in our brain are always firing. Beware. Be careful. You're in danger. That's when anxiety becomes disordered. Yeah. When it becomes too much, where you're always constantly worrying and feel like you're always in fear, like you're always in a danger or dangerous situation. And that becomes too much because we know what happens when we're feeling too afraid and too worried. We tend to close off ourselves and not go forward and do the things that we need to do, right? Mm-hmm. So when we speak about anxiety, it's so important that we understand the biological side, but then also understand what makes anxiety disordered. So a lot of people talk about the different types of anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. Generalized anxiety disorder, which is really having a lot of worries to a lot of different things in life. But then there's also some of the social anxieties, which is really being fearful of social situations because of the fear of judgment, the fear of being humiliated in a social setting. Mm-hmm. It's really important to understand, I guess, the fundamental pieces of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Also, mm-hmm. anxiety is one of those things that has mental components, what I call like the thoughts, mm-hmm. as well as mm-hmm. the physical. So when anxiety starts,
keep going. You can see I want to ask you a question. Okay.
Yes.
Before we get to the mental components and the mm-hmm. thoughts, right? Because mm-hmm. that's definitely where I want to end up to. But one of the things that it really surprises me, or when I first started to learn about anxiety was how much the impact of the physical components, like people could think there's something really, really wrong with them physically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So what kind of physical components do people see?
So this is so important because when we feel something from a feeling standpoint, mm-hmm. it's literally our body trying to tell us, hey, something's going on. Pay attention to me. Our feelings are literally our body trying to tell us something is up. Mm-hmm. So for example, you're thinking and worrying about certain things. Your worry becomes too much. You don't pay attention to what those worries are. You know, what we usually, whatever, I shrug it off. Got to mm-hmm. do what I got to do, help everybody and life things like on. That. Life goes on. Mm-hmm. What happens then is then the physical kicks in. It's like that secondary reminder. Hey, something is wrong. Pay attention to me.
And that's when what the heart rate goes and
right? Exactly. Yeah. So then mm-hmm. what happens is those physical symptoms, your heart rate starts to increase, like pounding heart. Sometimes some people get really sweaty in the hands and the palms, dry mouth. A lot of people feel this like lump in their chest, discomfort in the stomach area, not able to eat. Some people have, and especially for the Black women that I work with, we tend to get like the stomach pains, the digestional issues, not able to eat, keep things down, feeling nauseous. Mm-hmm. I've seen some people who have difficulty focusing and concentrating yeah. and remembering because there's mm-hmm. this too much stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. There's not being able to sleep, being restless, being really fatigued, having a lot of tension, feeling on edge.
This is a whole slew of symptoms.
It's a whole slew of stuff.
So it I would imagine it would be very easy to not realize that you're experiencing anxiety.
Yes. Yes. And the thing is, because we as not only as a society in terms of in the Caribbean region, but I think as a global society, we don't focus so much on the mental health pieces. And we were getting mm-hmm. better and better, but it's still, right? We don't focus mm-hmm. so much on mental health pieces. We focus on the physical. Okay. So it's kind of like our body is telling us something is wrong. But again, we see all these physical and we think something is physically wrong with me.
Okay.
Right? I've seen people going through panic and panic attacks. That's when the heart is really, really beating and really racing, thinking, oh my gosh, I'm mm-hmm. going to die. I'm having a heart attack. Because okay. it feels like a heart attack because that heart is racing and you might have that pain in the chest. You might be grabbing the arm. But what's happening is that can be associated to anxiety.
Wow. All right. So let's get to this, you know, I'm going to call it the idea of the strong Black woman, because I think that's a legendary idea.
Oh, yes.
That,
yes.
You know, we go back to not because, and I'm not saying that I don't believe in us being strong Black women or subscribe to that. But I do think that sometimes what it does is it slows us down from taking care of our mental wellness. Right. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think this idea of the strong Black women stops people or slows people down from taking care of their mental wellness? And can the consequence of that be living with more anxiety?
Oh, for sure. 100%. And again, same thing, right? I do believe that we as women, as Black women, that we are strong, that we have a lot of abilities, a lot of strength. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But what happens when, along with that strength, we also subscribe to the notion that we have to do it all on ourselves? Mm-hmm. We have to do it alone because we're strong, right? And I think the idea of emotions and weakness has been tied together for a really long time. Mm-hmm. So it's the idea that if I talk about being worried or anxious or sad or down, that I'm not strong. And that I have to be strong. So in order to be strong, I cannot say that I'm worried or that I need help. It's really, really hard, or has been really hard for some Black women to say, I need help. Because there's this idea that we do not get the help, but we give the help. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We're there to take care of, whether it's our homes or our families or our communities. We're there to help other people. Mm-hmm. And what happens with that, it's that mentality that I have to be strong. I have to keep going. People need me. I got to do this. But what happens in that, we don't take care of ourselves. Historically, we don't. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So all this idea of the strong Black woman, there's multi-layers there that definitely need to be unpacked as we do this work, as you're doing this work, whoever's listening, right? We have to get to the idea of supporting others does not take away from us needing support.
Right. I love the way you said that, right? Because I do think that that is, and all the lead up of what you said is that idea that if you're the supporter, that you don't need support. And so then it then becomes, if you need to ask for support, that maybe, you know, you're not qualified to be the supporter.
Not qualified to be the strong Black woman. Yes.
Right. And like that whole, that's the whole mess right there. Right. And so, yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I talk about this a lot recently. I have been speaking about this a lot because it's something that I'm also recognizing for myself. Right. And again, historically, it's just been this idea that I have to be the helper, even the profession that I'm in. It's very much from a helper profession.
Helping profession.
It's a helping profession. Yes, yes. This is what we do. Mm-hmm. But also recognizing in order to really be a helper, an effective helper and a good helper, you have to also recognize that I need help as well. I need the support as well. Because we're only as good to help someone else as we are as good to ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Certainly. Okay. Now, what would you suggest, you know, especially thinking of our listeners and if they suspect that they're having challenges with anxiety, what's the first step for them? And also, when is the point when you feel as though they should reach out and look for support?
So, you know what? If you feel that you're having a lot of worry, a lot of fears, and these are things that really are keeping you back or hindering you from going forward and moving forward, whether it's from everyday tasks to big goals and ideas that you have, know that reaching out for support does not make you incapable of reaching these goals and these tasks that you have to do. So in saying that, it's important to seek out people who are supportive. Because it's not everyone who has the ability to be supportive, right? We're all people. We all have our own baggage.
Very true. Right? Very true.
So it's important to go to the people in your networks, your families, your communities who can support you, right? Mm-hmm. And for those around who are thinking, okay, I think I can be a support, but I don't know how to do that. It's okay to say, I don't know how to help you, but let's go together and to find the help that you need.
Because that alone is giving that support by just being with the person, being like, I'm going to be with you in this space, right? I can't solve this for you. Mm-hmm. I might not even be able to direct you, but I'm here. And that alone is support.
Yes. Yes. And I guess this is a very personal example, but I mean, in my experience, personal experience, I've had people in my family to say, you know what? I don't know how to help you. Therefore, I'm gone. Right. And people don't recognize that that in and of itself is invalidating. Yeah. It's invalidating to the experience. Sometimes it's like, I'm coming to you, but I don't need you to fix it. Mm-hmm. I think that's it. Right. Like a lot of times the idea to fix it.
And I think that goes back to what we were talking about before with being the helper and that strong woman that comes in to say, all right, this is how we're going to do it. Boom, boom, boom. Oh. And it is, I think sometimes people might take that exit out of fear, out of unknown. There's so many reasons.
So many.
But I think if you're the supporter and you have that moment of feeling, I can't do this, I'm gone, think about it, you know, and it doesn't mean that you need to be there to solve it for the person, but you can just love them where they're at,
yes,
you know,
and
show that to them.
Yeah. And that's so important because, you know, there's two sides of it. All people have their stuff, as I said before. And especially if you are looking for people to reach out to, go to the ones that historically have been there for you, or even go to the professionals, whether it's a doctor, your family doctor, nurses, mental health advocates, mental health professionals to say, you know what, I need support in this. What help can you give me? What resources, what tools, what skills can you start to help me with? And also being open to be able to get that help, right? Because a lot of times in order to go and get help, we're fighting our own.
You got to be ready for it, eh?
You got to be ready for it. Yes, yeah. And know that, yes, okay, it's going to be hard. I'm not going to sit here and lie to you. It's going to be hard and there's going to be challenges that come up, but the help that you can get is there. Just allow yourself to go and get it.
Certainly, certainly. That's great advice. Okay, so I want to talk for a few minutes about actionable tools. I have a very specific example that I think about when I have actionable tools. Listeners, you know, I'm in the Turks and Caicos Islands, and in 2017, we had two hurricanes. One was an extremely major hurricane. So we had Hurricane Irma, and on the heels of that came Hurricane Maria. And I have a very vivid example that will always, to me, that was the point where I was like, I get this anxiety thing now, right? I had a 3-month-old at the time. The home that we were in, that roof was gone. So we had to go into another home, which is really right next door. There's a set of townhouses. But now here's Maria coming. And I'm looking at this roof. I'm like, so what if this roof doesn't last? And a 3-month-old who's only breastfeeding.
Yes.
Right. And I remember waking up one night and just being totally, what if? And I felt as though everything, heartbeat, everything was going. Mm-hmm. And then I had to have a moment of, okay, wait, this is anxiety. This is it. This is what I talk about. This is what, because I've been lucky not to experience a lot of anxiety, but, or kind of to know how to manage certain things. But that idea, when it kicks in and it hits you out of nowhere. And at that point, I definitely drew on something. I don't know if you know Mel Robbins, that she speaks about the 5-second rule of counting backwards and then having a grounding thought. And I was like, okay, I can do this, right?
I can do that. Yes.
And I know that that is, those little actionable tools are things that are great to have at our fingertips. You know, what's your thought on that?
And
what can kick in?
Yeah. So I think that's a great example, because it is like that anxiety, the what if. It was the what if for you. If this happens again, what do I do? Do I have the tools to cope with this happening again, with this potential danger happening
again? And the mind just going. Like a hamster in a wheel.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's an analogy that I use with my clients. I'm going to show you. So it's this analogy, this little equation that I use with some of my clients, right? It's anxiety equals danger divided by coping. The more dangerous, the more fearful, the more scary something seems, the more anxiety we're going to have about it. And then the more fears and danger we have, the more we feel like, oh my gosh, I don't have the ability to cope with this. I don't know what I would do if this other roof goes. Right. So what I always tell my clients, I use this equation in different scenarios, right? This was actually a client scenario, but it's starting to think of, okay, I'm worried about these what ifs. If this were to happen, how would I cope with it? How would I deal with it again? So you're sitting up, drenched in sweat, in the middle of the night, looking at this roof saying, oh my gosh, oh my God, Maria's coming. What am I going to do? What would I do? Right? You having kind of an action plan of what you would do helps to bring down the anxiety, because it increases the different coping strategies and tools that you have. Therefore, it minimizes the sense of danger. Still feels dangerous, but it's like, okay, if this happens, this is my plan. If this roof goes, if this roof starts to leak, if the roof is gone and our house floods, I know these are my 5 steps that I'm going to do.
Okay. And that makes perfect sense to me, especially as you, like, I feel like you've just given us a mathematical equation for it. But especially when I'm working with students who have test anxiety, it's exactly that. Mm-hmm. It's exactly that I work on doing is okay. Well, if this happens, then we do boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
If this happens, then we do boom, 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 boom. Yes. And being essentially over-prepared so that when it kicks in, or if it kicks in, your go-to strategy is there to pull it.
Yes. You're not just so focused on that work. Danger.
Yeah. It takes the work.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. And so with my clients, what I always do, I think of cognitive thinking tools, but I'm also doing a lot of the actionable stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. So like this is kind of a melding of both, because it's a thinking and action of a what if plan, but mm-hmm. also something else. Like you mentioned grounding. Grounding is great because in the moment, right, while you're sitting
explain
there, drenched
and shed.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, so grounding is really pulling you back into this present time because, mm-hmm. you know, with your example, you're just thinking of the future. Roof is gone, 3 months old. What do I do? Don't have mm-hmm. anything to do. So grounding really pulls you back into the right now. Where am I right now? How am I going to deal with this right now? So grounding tools, some of the really successful grounding tools that I tend to use with clients is the ones that uses your senses, right? So the sense of touch, mm-hmm. the sense of sight, hearing, smell, taste. So there's this great one that it's called, uses the five senses, but it kind of goes backwards. So it's like, look at five things that you can mm-hmm. see. Mm-hmm. What are four things that you can hear? So you stop, like, what can I hear around me? I can hear, maybe for you, I can hear the ocean. I can hear the wind. I can hear children crying.
yes.
What are three? What are three mm-hmm. things that I can smell?
Mm-hmm. Two things
I can touch, and what's one thing I can taste to yeah. really pull you back into the, okay, this is where I am to focus. Because a lot mm-hmm. of times with the anxiety, we're focused on the racing heart and we're focused on the danger. Yeah. And then we get literally pulled into the what if.
Okay.
Right. Which then what happens with that, we get pulled into what if, and it actually increases our sense of danger and our fear and anxiety.
It's a chicken and egg then after
yes,
that.
Yes. So boom, then boom, boom. It's yeah. funny because I have all my anxiety tools here. And then exactly what happens is that you start your anxiety cycle again.
Yes. So explain that to listeners that can't
okay,
see.
Okay. So for those of you who can't see, I just pulled out something called the cycle of anxiety. So exactly like what I said, when we start having a lot of fear, a lot of danger about anxiety, we start to get really worried and fearful of that feeling, which the worry or the fear or whatnot. And what happens is that it becomes so uncomfortable to us. So uncomfortable, and we feel like we can't control it. So a lot of times, what do? We ignore it. We avoid it, yeah. right? Because if I don't think about it, let's pretend it's not there. If I don't think about it, if I don't look at it, it's not there. Out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. What mm-hmm. happens in the short term, that gives you some relief. Okay, good. I'm not thinking about it. It's over there. I don't have to worry about it. But what happens in the long term, it's actually not gone. It's just buried. Okay. It's just pushed back. So in the long term, it actually grows the anxiety. The anxiety gets bigger because you're not dealing with it. You're not mm-hmm. doing anything. It just kind of parked and allowed to grow and grow and fester and fester and fester. And then what happens is you think about it. The wind starts to blow. The roof starts to take. You're like, oh, Lord. And then it comes back. And then what happens? You start it all over again. You start having more
anxiety.
Avoid it. And exactly. And that's literally the cycle of anxiety. It just keeps mm-hmm. going and going. So it's so important, like with the grounding exercise or kind of with that anxiety equation that I gave, it's that interrupting. It's interrupting it before it gets the avoidance.
Right. Interrupting that thought. Definitely.
That thought. Definitely. Interrupting the sense cycle. Of danger. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The impending doom that a lot of us go through with what could happen, those what ifs.
Okay, definitely. Okay, so we've talked about when it kicks in, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we've already kind of got into proactive a little bit, mm-hmm. but is there anything else that you want to say in terms of what listeners can do to be proactive or reduce the likelihood of feeling anxiety or let's say having an anxiety attack?
Yes. So it's so important in those times to really be able to admit to yourself that something's going on with me. I'm worried about the roof falling off.
That's the step one, right?
That's the step
one. That's the step one. That's ground zero.
That's ground zero to say, you know what? I'm not going to push it aside. I am worried about something and name what that something is. Mm-hmm. Name it, give it space, what that something is. Because a lot of times we don't do that. We don't name it. We don't give it space. We want to push it aside. And then, as I said, it grows and grows and grows. So one of the most tangible thinking and actionable steps, name it. You can name it out loud. I am worried about the roof falling off. I am worried about doing a bad job on a presentation. I am worried about whatever it is. Now, yes, that is the first step. But even in that step, it does take a lot of courage, because what you're doing is you're admitting that something is going awry for you, or something is going wrong. Right. Some people's like, no, but I can't admit that because I'm supposed to be perfect. I'm supposed to be strong. I'm supposed to be all this. But you know what? Do yourself a favor and say, yes, there's things that I am worried about.
And you're right. Okay. It is a courage game. That takes courage.
It does take courage. It takes a lot of courage. So, I mean, other than really the thinking stuff, the doing stuff, the actionable stuff, the deep breathing helps for some people. Right?
I was going to ask about lifestyle. Like, if you're a deep breather, perhaps meditation, your exercise, your diet, do those things have an effect, not just on wellness, but specifically on anxiety?
Yes.
Managing anxiety?
Yeah. So those things all have a really, really good impact on being able to manage anxiety. What happens a lot of times is that, say I'm new to deep breathing, I'm new to meditation, I'm new to different forms of exercise. And I tried, I'm like, no, it doesn't work. It's not working. I'm still feeling anxious. I'm still feeling worried. The thing is, you're just starting that practice. You have to build up like muscle memory to do it. You start working out, lifting weights, your muscle doesn't automatically pop up. Times to do it, right? And so it's the same thing.
The fact that you called it a practice, right? We call it a practice for a reason, because you got to do it. You got to do it over and over again.
You have to do it. Yeah. So those of you listening and like, no, deep breathing is not for me, or meditation is not for me, or even journaling, something like writing your thoughts down, those aren't for you. You need to keep at it. Have some consistency.
Trust the process.
Trust the process. It's a hard process to trust, but trust yourself enough to give yourself permission to work on yourself.
I love that. Yeah. Well, you know, thank you so much, Natasha, for jumping into this topic with me. You know, we've covered a lot in this episode. I felt like I could have taken bits of this and we could have made them into other episodes.
For sure.
But, you know, before we leave, do you have any last thoughts for listeners?
I think our last thoughts, you know what, all of this that we have been speaking out today, it takes work, it takes time, but you know what, really, again, give yourself the permission to make the time for yourself, because I think as women, as Black women, we often make the time to be able to help someone else to do their work. You are enough and important enough to be able to take the time to do this for yourself. And remember, the more that you help yourself to get to a sense of wellness, to take care of your own worries and your anxieties and fear, the better place that you will be ultimately to help those around you. So don't negate yourself in this. And I'm not saying it in a selfish way, but really in a way that really will focus on the self, the family, and the community.
Right. Definitely. Well, thanks again for joining us. Where can listeners find you?
Yeah. So you can find me. I'm pretty active on social media. You can find me on Instagram. My handle is NatashaPennyCook.therapy. Also on Facebook, you can find me, Natasha Pennycook. And I'm on LinkedIn as well at Natasha Pennycook. So this has, you know, thank you so much, Yolanda. This has been great to come on and have this chat with you and with everyone listening. Thank you for listening.
You're very welcome. So we wish you all the best in this 2021. Yes. And, you know, I'm going to call on you again at some point.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. You can call on me again. Yes.
I love chatting with you. So
yes, awesome. It's been great. You can also find me on, I keep forgetting this, on my website, which is in the process of being uploaded. It's Natasha Penny. Cook.com.
Awesome. So don't worry, I'll have those links on the show page for you.
Sounds great.
So you can visit the show page at www.yolandrobinson.com/episode35. So thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Shifting Perspectives. Have an awesome week.